Hey, it's WeZone. You're listening to Current Events, Politics, Presidents, and much more with Adam Lept and our official presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor every Monday morning, starting a few minutes after 10, right here on WWGH 107.1.
It's August 5th, 2019, and not surprisingly, Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, had some interesting, informative celebrity guests earlier this morning, but now it's my turn to take the microphone. It's Adam Lep here, as you heard the weasel so eloquently announce. And as we often do on this program, we are joined by our official presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Feinman, from his domicile in southeastern Florida, to talk about, well, of course, we're going to talk about the myriad Democratic presidential hopefuls and the Donald. We have to start the show out, Ron, on a sad note, as there's a big news story over the weekend, which hit home in very nearby Dayton, Ohio. So before we get into that, how are you doing on this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing all right, trying to recover from the two tragedies that occurred in El Paso and Dayton in the last 2 days. It's just unbelievable. It really is.
The Oregon district is a big, kind of a trendy party district, east side of downtown Dayton. Well-known, compact area. It's known as being safe, easy to access. Very sad. And when it hits home, it is just horrendous. All these innocent people, again, not far from our studios here in Marion. What's become of our country, Ron? Is it safe to do anything other than stay in your house on behind a locked door? People are afraid to go anywhere. What do we make of this?
I'm starting to wonder, because whether it's a school or a college or a mall or a church or a synagogue or a concert event or a baseball or football stadium or any other kind of sports event, no place seems safe because we have too many rifles out there. You know, semi-automatic rifles. It's one thing to have handguns, but it's just crazy that nothing can be done about having regulation of what kind of weapons people can have, because you don't use those for hunting. That's for killing people. So I just don't understand why the Republican Party and our president would not work on that with the Democrats. They should.
Couple things with weapons, Ron. First, guns don't kill people. People kill people. We know that. And we also know that people who don't follow the law aren't going to stop getting something illegal just because it is illegal, and drugs is an analogy there. How much?
Well, during the 10 years that we had the law passed in 94 to 04 under Clinton and not renewed under Bush, actually the number of such incidents was way down. So it does help. It does solve the issue, though. No, you're right.
So we do feel that outlawing these assault weapons will help, but it will not stop it. Can it be stopped? And people are saying it's Donald Trump's fault. He's encouraged this by his actions. How true is that? Is it? I mean, as I said, I give the president credit, or I criticize the president for anything which might happen in this great country. The economy, for example, interest rates went down slightly recently, and that's a good thing. Especially me, I have lines of credit and that are tied to interest rates. But now we take a look at violence, and how much is the Donald involved in this mix? Is it okay for people to blame him and say that he's brought about this atmosphere?
Well, I mean, there's going to be guns, there's going to be people who do these things, yes. But his whole promotion of racism and refusal to condemn white supremacists, and he has not condemned them, does help to affect especially young men, mostly men, who don't like the idea of people of other backgrounds, whether they're gay or Jewish or Hispanic or black, or to be able to move ahead in this society. And so I think he does share some of the blame by his rhetoric and his refusal to speak up on this issue more than he has. He's now claiming, as of yesterday, that mental illness caused this, and there's no indication that mental illness caused it at all. I would argue he's more mentally ill than these people. These people are out to get revenge because they've been inspired by the president, that particularly with the one in El Paso, that Hispanics are running over the country. Well, Hispanics are already one out of six Americans as it is, whether they're legal or illegal, and you're not going to change that. And it's something where we have to get used to the fact we're a diverse country, and we don't go and attack groups as he did when he announced in 15, when he was calling everybody from Mexico rapists and murderers and all that. That is not a way a president should act.
Now, you've talked on social media that some of the Democratic presidential candidates have made more appropriate responses to this, the tragic events, Buttigieg and Castro and others, versus what the Donald has had to say. And how does that affect the upcoming landscape for the presidential primary for the Democrats?
As I also wrote today on Facebook, and I'm trying to get an article, yesterday on Facebook, and I'm trying to get published on History News Network, but it can't be that quick. The problem is many of the candidates of the Democrats are not what, I guess, white supremacists like, because really, if you take away Beto O'Rourke and Joe Biden, everybody else is either a woman, and a lot of these people have trouble with women having power, or is a minority, whether it's Hispanic in the case of Castro, African-American in the case of Booker, mixed race as Harris is, or even Asian as Yang is, or Jewish as Sanders is. And, of course, if I use the word socialist, it makes people think he's a communist, which he isn't. All these people, and also Buttigieg being, let's face it, gay, these are all things that make them all much more likely to be the target of people who would like to assassinate them. I hate bringing it up, but I wrote the book on presidential assassinations and threats, and wrote a chapter on Robert Kennedy being killed, Huey Long being killed further back in the 30s, and George Wallace being paralyzed for life. And I am concerned that these people need Secret Service protection now, because there's bound to be an incident with one of these people or more, because they're not the typical image of a white Christian straight man being president. And that's a problem, I think, because we have such intolerance that has been developed in this country.
And you've advocated spending funds and hiring Secret Service to protect these presidential contenders.
Yes.
Indicating that we've spent plenty of money
25 of the 10 that are going to go to the next round, September, yes.
We spend plenty of money on Donald Trump and his golf excursions, so this might be
exactly $110 million we can spend on Secret Service for these people that are running, yes, to protect them.
But what about when somebody drops out of the race? For example, we know she's a front runner, but let's say Kamala Harris doesn't make it far, and she is a female and mixed race, certainly very much a minority type of candidate. Would she still get protection? What would the risk be, especially if she was used to getting the Secret Service protection?
As I wrote in the blog entry, and also I think I wrote on Facebook, they should get it up to 3 months after they've withdrawn. Not forever, no, of course not. But if they're going to withdraw today, give them 3 months because of the effect they've had, that people are aware who they are, and then hopefully they're not in the news for 3 months because they're no longer in the race. After 3 months after they leave the race, then they would have it withdrawn. And obviously, by the time of the convention, only the presidential candidate would have it, or the others would be finishing up the 3 months, and only the presidential and vice presidential candidates obviously would have it, and their families.
Would it kind of seem like we're in a police state if we start providing more of the protection? I understand and completely agree we need to have full protection for the president, but it just seems sad that you look at old TV clips and you see the president in a convertible waving to people and almost able to shake hands. And we can't do that
crazy
anymore.
Country.
You just visited D.C. and you saw you don't just walk up to the White House and look around. Everything is like a fortress. And we need to have this.
It has to be because
obviously.
Of the way things are now, particularly with modern technology, of how people can kill from a distance even. So it's still a big job to protect the president and his family, and the vice president and his family.
It's just so sad that we have to put this incredibly high priority on security.
Oh, yes.
I don't know what else to say. I like a lot of modern technology. You know, I love email. I like my energy efficient car with all of its fancy gadgets. But we miss the good old days when the president was in a convertible waving to people and feeling like he was one of us. Now it's like, well, everything is so much behind all the security, and we need to have this. Not saying for 1 second we don't, but it just is so sad that we have to have all of these precautions. And it's almost like we're in two different worlds: the world of of the politicians, the high-level politicians like the president, vice president, and now you're saying possibly the candidates and just the regular person like you or I. And even if you are famous or rich, well, you're not getting the protection because you're not somebody who's going to be vulnerable.
Well, they often hire rich. These people usually hire security, but they're not government people, yeah.
And yeah. It is unfortunate, but it is a fact of life in 2019.
But after Robert Kennedy's assassination and George Wallace's being seriously wounded, it makes it clear that we're living in an age of a lot of tumult and turmoil, and there are people who would want to become famous or infamous by trying to shoot or, you know, to kill or wound a candidate, and they are remembered. The people who killed Kennedy and wounded Wallace are famous, in a sense, infamous, but famous. And so, and particularly with the mix of people being so different than the usual case, they're not white, straight males, they're all kinds of everybody else, except for a couple of them, it is, I think, a growing threat. Particularly, I think Castro probably is the most threatened because he's the only one who's Hispanic in the race. And at a time when there's so much attacks against Latinos and Mexican Americans and people fearing them so much more than even African Americans or others, I actually think he's the most endangered just by the fact of who he is.
Yeah,
and that's
just,
sad.
Part of the changing landscape of the world that we live in, and
yes,
that's
horrible.
About all I really can say. I'm old enough to remember where there wasn't this kind of security, and I'm thinking back to other assassinations. We talked about this the first time we got together on the air, you know, 104 shows ago.
Yes.
Other assassinations, not just presidents or candidates. John Lennon comes to mind. It was a crazed fan.
Yes.
That assassinated him, and what a gifted musician, leaving us way too early. And not much I can say about it. It is just so sad, and with John Lennon having fought for peace. And I'm speechless. I can't think of anything to say. It's just sad that we have to live in a world with those kinds of dangers and the kind of precautions that we need to take. In terms of the Secret Service protection for candidates, I'm undecided. I would agree that it's a higher priority than paying for Donald Trump and his golf excursions. That I would say, but I don't think we should be paying for Donald Trump and his golf excursions if he wants to.
No, we should not. But if we are, that certainly means there's no excuse not to protect presidential contenders who are serious, not 25 of them, the ones who are going further, who have at least 130,000 donors and 2% in polls. And then, of course, some of them will drop out over time. So they'll, after 3 months after they drop out, they're out of. So it's not going to go on for all of them for a long time. But, I mean, imagine with Robert Kennedy, he got shot before the convention, before we knew he had the nomination. He might not have gotten it. But imagine if the presidential candidate gets shot in the middle of the campaign. Can you just imagine what that would be like? What a horror. So, you know, we really need to protect people who might be president because, you know, it's just something with the guns around and the violence and the tumult that we live through now, much like the 60s and early 70s, I think that there is a great danger of at least an attempt at an assassination, if not a success.
Let's hope that we don't have to spend a show talking about a tragic event like that, but we do need to take precautions and take a look at some what-if scenarios. And again, your book, Ron, about presidential assassinations, if there was ever a time to bring it up and bring it to light, this is the time. And it is a real danger. Certainly the study of assassinations or potential assassinations, although hardly a pleasant topic, is an interesting one. And in your book, it's out in paperback. It's available at Amazon and the Worthington Library, not far from where I hang my hat. They have a copy of it, and you can get it at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, they do? I didn't know that. It's nice to know. Ohio State, you mean?
I told you that. So
I don't recall. Okay, Ohio State University. Well, I would think they would, but I didn't know they did, that I recall. Thank you.
It's not part of Ohio State. It's a suburban library in
Northern. So it's a public library. That's impressive. Yeah. I'm sure Ohio State may have it, too, but if a public library, I know some do have it, that's really nice. Because
I told you, and I showed you the entry in their online card catalog, but that's okay. Your book is so popular, Ron, it's hard to keep track of all the places where one can purchase it, but we do do encourage people. We know it's not a pleasant topic, but it is an interesting one, and one we do need to consider. I'll look up Ron's book about presidential assassinations. It's definitely well worth reading, and I can assure you will enrich many brain cells. As it's hardly a pleasant topic, but one we do need to consider and learn about. Another topic, and this is an obvious one since it has taken place since the last time we got together. That, of course, is a debate between the 146 or more presidential contenders. And as you did after the first debate, Ron, on your blog, again, Ron writes the daily blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, which we encourage you to peruse, bookmark, tell your friends about, all that good stuff. So you talk about the second night of the second Democratic presidential debate with Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Bill de Blasio, Tulsi Gabbard, and others, including Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and again, Pocahontas herself, Elizabeth Warren. You mentioned that some of them, and this includes the ones from the first debate, have a good opportunity to move forward. We talked a bit about Jay Inslee. He's a bit obsessed with climate change, but I admire him greatly for enacting statewide, he's a governor of Washington State, statewide net neutrality law.
He's going anywhere, though. He's not getting the donors or the polls yet. He has to the end of September, at the end of August, to be, but it doesn't look like he's going to make it, honestly. That's the problem.
But it's nice to at least consider a candidate who has some knowledge of science, unlike certain people that we won't name, but their first name is Donald. And also mentioned Cory Booker. I think he's kind of a cult favorite. He did
very well in the second night. He really did. I think he improved his stature quite a bit, yes.
And we talked about Steve Bullock. We both like him. It just governor of Montana, well-spoken again.
Yeah, he was good. First time he's in a debate, but I don't think he's going to get the backing, unfortunately.
Yeah, excellent science knowledge, good age, mid-50s, but we're not sure he's going to make it.
Yes.
But he's a potential vice presidential candidate or maybe a presidential candidate in the future or possibly a cabinet appointee. You never quite know. And then the candidates everybody talks about, again, Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, Bernie, you know what a fan I am of his, Kamala Harris.
Well, as I wrote, Bernie Sanders was shouting. I don't think that was very good. No, I think Pete and Amy did very well in the debate, in that first debate, along with Bullock. They were the ones that stood out. I don't think Sanders was screaming and yelling. That was not a good thing. It's just the way he speaks. I guess that's the way he is. He's grouchy.
He just expects he'll round up supporters with his Santa Claus attitude. Yeah, we'll just get $25 an hour for flipping a burger. And you can just go to college for free. You don't have to work. You can just sit on your rear end, and we'll just pay you to be an American. That's kind of how I see people interpret him as. And similar perspective from Andrew Yang and his $1,000 stipend. As I see it, Ron, there's no other way to say it, and I may get people disliking what I have to say. That's putting everybody on welfare, and I will not take one penny from welfare. I work for a living, and I'd be out on the street if I weren't able to support myself. And this $1,000 stipend is preposterous. Let's start with the fact that we have a large national debt. Let's pay that instead. It's a shame, Ron, because first of all, I would like to see an Asian president. I think that would be great. That would be that cool factor.
Very intelligent guy. He's smart.
And it's like he's self-made, but he wants to go in and make this welfare payment. $1,000 to him is... That's his
the only thing,
change.
I'm not going to say I agree with him. I don't. But I want to point out, and I think I may have told you this, that in the early 70s, Richard Nixon, as president, suggested $500 a month for everyone. He actually did. It just went nowhere. But it was a Democratic Congress. I don't know why it didn't, but he did actually suggest a minimum, at that point, $500 a month. So this is not like it's a brand new idea, the concept. It was 50 years ago or 45 years ago with Richard Nixon in the White House.
Well, a couple things, Ron. If we were to take away Watergate, I think Tricky Dicky would be one of our, probably the greatest president in my lifetime. But again, can't really take away Watergate because that kind of ruined the whole thing for Nixon. Nixon also...
Yes.
Governed when we had very, very high tax rates for the very wealthy people. So there are certainly things in his economic scheme of things that I don't agree with. But one thing about the $500, didn't we have a much lower budget deficit at that time? And if you do have a surplus or a balanced budget, well, then you're kind of paying a dividend to people who live here. And that is a very different concept. For example, I think Alaska, because they've got so much money from oil, they had, I don't know the exact plan, and I'm probably totally showing my ignorance of what's going on in that great state, but because they have a surplus from oil, they might be paying, they were, or they had some system where they were paying dividends to people who live there. That is different. Yang is a welfare payment as I see it, and people are saying, well, it's because of all this automation. We have robots doing your job, so we just pay you instead. That's ridiculous. And I've heard some really intelligent people talk about that. And it doesn't sound too intelligent to me, Ron. It is different. So it's not the same at all. Not even a cousin to this idea of a dividend due to prosperity. We have a very serious budget deficit that is getting seriouser and seriouser.
One thing that would help is if they would stop giving massive tax cuts to the top 1% or the top few percent. And they've been doing that since Reagan's time and Bush too, and now Trump. So that's what's really helped to cause the great deficit, is these tax cuts that are undeserved.
But I don't think Yang has a chance, and goodness.
No, he doesn't.
Thank goodness for that. Again, Inslee, I don't think he would really make climate change his number one priority if he were in the Oval Office, but I think he would make it a high priority, and I think it should be. It just, his science knowledge is excellent, and I think net neutrality would definitely come back the day that he would step behind the desk at the Oval Office, and that would certainly make me and other people in the computer business, and all Americans, it's not just if you're in the computer business, it would make us happy, but I don't think he has much of a chance either. I honestly think Bullock could be a viable vice president. We talked last show that Biden president, Bullock vice president, they both come from states with three electoral votes, but we're looking at the states that surround them. Yeah. Bullock could get.
That's why it's unlikely. You're not going to have two people with the minimum electoral votes. But I want to point out that Biden could pick any of the people. He could pick Harris. He could pick, I don't think he'd pick Warren, because actually that'd make it the oldest ticket in history, 78 and 71 of the inauguration. That would not be a good idea, age-wise, 78 and 71. But he could pick, in theory, Klobuchar, or he could pick Harris, he could pick Castro, he could pick O'Rourke, he could pick even Bullock, he could pick, Buttigieg. He has a lot, and they're all much younger, so he has a wide variety of possible people for vice president if he's a candidate.
Yeah, I honestly think he might pick Bullock. As we mentioned earlier, Biden might be from Delaware, but Delaware is a suburb of Philadelphia. Pennsylvania is a very important state. The entire northeast part of the country.
Bullock,
Montana, traditionally Republican, and we would probably get three Democratic electoral votes instead. That's nice, but Wyoming and Idaho, those other Rocky Mountain states, we may or may not get them to go Democratic, but Texas, that could swing either way. So some of these states, Arizona also, that are somewhat near Montana, they could end up going blue. So that could help.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, as I wrote this past week, if Beto O'Rourke or Castro was the nominee, if it turns out, that might help. According to one poll, O'Rourke could win Texas against Trump. So if Texas could switch and go Democratic, then the Midwest would not matter as much, because you get 38 electoral votes from Texas. So that is a fascinating thought, but I don't know if O'Rourke or Castro can be the nominee. But if they're the running mate, they still might help.
Well, we shall see. Whatever transpires, Ron, it will be a surprise.
Always interesting.
At this point, do we expect anybody running in the Republican primary other than Donald? My fantasy of Nikki Haley.
Well, the governor of Massachusetts is running. That so far is the only person. And he will not stop him, but he will be in the. He'll get some votes, but he's not going to stop him, unfortunately. He was the running mate of Gary Johnson in 2016 on the Libertarian Party ticket. But Justin Amash, if he runs as a Libertarian, the one who left the Republican Party and is quite conservative, if he was a Libertarian candidate, he could take a few percentage points away like Gary Johnson did in 2016 if he was to run. So there's that danger to Trump.
At this point, is it virtually 100% chance that Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee? Is there any chance it could be somebody else?
Well, if he's still able to do the job, I don't think it's very likely that anybody can stop it. But where will be on the ballot, I would assume, in most states.
But he has no chance of winning. He probably
will not get. We'll see. Maybe he would get 40% of the vote, but he wouldn't win a state. He might just do well against him, like Eugene McCarthy got 42% against Lyndon Johnson in New Hampshire, and that sort of like made Johnson decide to drop out, because that was a stunner in 1968 when Senator Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota won 42% of the vote against LBJ, the incumbent president. But I don't know if Well can do that, honestly. But who knows? We'll see.
As some other candidates have done, if Well does okay, I don't think he expects to win, but he will get some
votes.
He's a
guy, I must say that. But I wish Kasich was running, but he's not, John Kasich.
Could Weld possibly challenge as a third candidate, an independent, as some other candidates have done? Might he try to do that?
We could, yes. And I want to mention, by the way, Nikki Haley, who I know you love and I admire her, she has been critical of what Trump has been saying about about Elijah Cummings. And I thought, that's interesting that she's taking a chance on publicly criticizing the president about his way he's treating Elijah Cummings, the head of the House Intelligence Committee. I thought that was quite interesting. I don't know what it all means in the long run, but it is interesting, I think.
And I probably had something to do with her resigning her cabinet post, figuring if she were to speak critically of her boss,
that alienating him. She said what she wants to say, which is nice to see.
That he would fire her. So instead, she fired herself.
Yeah, talk about that. What about Dan Coats being let go, and he can't even find a decent person to be the head of DNI? This John Ratcliffe, this Texas congressman, had to withdraw. And Dan Coats was a damn good director of national intelligence, a conservative Republican, but he was very loyal to his job and to doing the right thing. And this is worrisome, because this is a warning sign. You should not have a DNI who's going to only tell you what you want to hear. He's going to tell you what the facts are, as Coats did, about Saudi Arabia, about ISIS, about Iran, about North Korea, and about Russia. But he's ignoring all of it, Trump. And that's why he finally pushed Coates out.
So that kind of completes that trio of people that you and I liked. We may not agree with everything they have to say, but we liked cabinet members. Mr. Coates, the aforementioned, the lovely Nikki Haley, and of course, James Mad Dog Mattis. We were all
He was good. Those were the good people in the government, really, in my mind, yes. Many of the others are horrific, like Betsy DeVos. Oh, my God, this woman is impossible. She's doing so much harm in the field of education, but he's not getting rid of her. It's clear.
You just kind of wonder about the cabinet appointments and all the conflicts of interest. And
Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, it's just terrible, in my opinion, but he's still there, And he's not even the chief of staff. He's acting. There's a lot of acting. A lot of these decisions are not filled with an actual member. It's an acting chief of staff.
And what I call emoluments clause, or the emoluments clause, where all these conflicts of interest.
That he breaks every day, the president.
Yeah, not just with his own business interests and his family, but hiring people that were in corporate America. Lobbyists are in some other way connected, kind of on the opposite side of what they're supposed to be doing. And
like the one who's supposed to run the National Park Service doesn't believe in national parks. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
so much damage to the environment and to the Interior Department and the Environmental Protection Agency.
Really don't fully understand these cabinet appointments, but some of the people have funny names, Munchkin, I call him, the Secretary of the Treasury,
Mnuchin. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I call him Munchkin. But
he was a miserable wretch when he owned homes. He pushed people out without even giving them a chance to keep their homes. And this, by the way, became an issue because it was brought up by Tulsi Gabbard about Harris, that Harris did not defend these people against Mnuchin. I thought that was interesting, how Gabbard came in and attacked Harris. It was a surprise. So there's two women fighting each other. I thought that was an interesting moment.
Getting back closer to home, Ron, yesterday,
yes.
Hecklers interrupted Ohio Governor Mike DeWine as he spoke at a candlelight vigil for victims and survivors of the Dayton shooting. The crowd chanted, "Do something, do something." DeWine shared his experience dealing with the death of his daughter 26 years ago. And it kind of caused the event to wrap up rather quickly. Doesn't seem like DeWine's having a very good tenure as governor. As I've mentioned, my dislike, if not hatred, for the guy. Seems like all he's done
is... Was his daughter a baby or what? This is 26 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like all DeWine has done is removed the woman's rights. That is, made abortion
yeah.
very illegal, which I don't
agree
with.
But what happened with his daughter? Do you know what happened? Why he talked about his daughter?
I don't, but you know, while we're talking, I'll look it up just so we can find out.
Yeah, because I guess she was an infant or very young, and maybe, you know, but, yeah.
He also...
That's a terrible thing. These Republicans are not dealing with the real issues out there, and I think they're in trouble for 2020. I cannot imagine voters voting a lot of these people back. Like now, Mitch McConnell, imagine this, he fractured his shoulder at home in Kentucky. And, you know, he's already got troubles with his public opinion polls, and he's 77, and I'm thinking, do you really want to be there till you're 84? I think it's time for him to retire next year. He's so hated, he's called Moscow Mitch now by many because he refuses to have any kind of security for elections coming up in 2020, and he has the control of it as the Senate Majority Leader. But suddenly having this injury, maybe he will decide not to run.
And DeWine's other infamous act would be the increase in the gas taxes. And no, I don't want to pay more for gas, but if there's a reason to, I wouldn't mind. The problem is where Ohio is a big crossroads and a lot of truck drivers, not to mention just people driving regular cars like myself. And I think gas is expensive enough, and it's good to keep prices competitive, and that's good for the economy. I don't think that was a good way to spend money. As other people have said, let's make marijuana legal, tax it, use that to pay yeah. for the roads. This isn't a joke that I thought of, but I like it, called in the pothole tax. Use pot to pay for fixing potholes. That, to me, is more logical.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I was going to say that liquor was legalized in 1933, so it would bring in tax money after having been banned for 14 years by the 18th Amendment.
I proudly voted for Cordray, and this is one where I don't regret my decision. Ron,
no, Cordray would have been much better. Yes.
Mike DeWine's daughter passed away in a car accident in 1993. She was driving too fast for the wet road conditions.
So she was an adult?
So that's what occurred in 1993.
Probably a teenager, late teenager. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
is that his only child, though? I assume he has other children.
They've had 8 children altogether.
Well, of course, horrible, but at least he does have other children. Not that that makes up for it, but, I mean, I don't... What's really terrible is when somebody loses an only child. That's just impossible to bear,
yeah.
Although losing any child is horrible.
Interestingly, we don't hear much about his family. His wife's name is Frances, and that's also the first name of former Governor Ted Strickland's wife, and Ted Strickland and Frances Strickland have, of course, been interviewed by the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears. Mike DeWine has been on once or twice, so he's also shared the microphone that you and I...
Yeah, I've seen Mike DeWine when he was a senator. He never impressed me as a dynamic person to listen to or look at.
No,
he isn't, is he?
Yeah, he's not...
Very bland.
Yeah, I said I voted for Cordray. He certainly has the charisma. Moderate Democrat, for the most part, his beliefs are consistent with mine. But he lost, and that's kind of how it goes. DeWine certainly is a knowledgeable public servant with a lot of experience. He went to ONU's College of Law in the Lima, Ohio area, Miami University in Oxford. He got a BS in education. So he has a lot of experience knowing what's going on in the state, but do we agree with what he has to say? That's a different matter. And unlike Kasich, who really moderated his views, especially in the last 5 or 10 years, he was considered to be very conservative when I first learned about him. And now he's one of the most liberal Republicans you're likely to run into. But DeWine has stayed very conservative. And in terms of, again, the aforementioned abortion issue, hasn't wavered. Contrast that to Kasich. And, you know, I miss John Kasich. And I have no problem voting for him for president, but as we talked about earlier, I don't think that Donald is going to be ending his campaign or losing the Republican nomination. So it's either the Donald or whoever is running with a D next to his or her name, which we'll decide in November of 2020. Whatever happens, Ron, it'll certainly be an interesting election. Like it always
I was going to say, Nikki Haley, probably by speaking out against the president about Elijah Cummings, probably that will ensure that Mike Pence will be the running mate next year for Trump.
I would certainly say that would be another Mike Pence and Donald Trump ticket with some mudslinging between the candidates, fake news, and who knows whatever else, but that's part of the game of politics that we like talking about here on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, and we get together and talk about that kind of stuff every Monday between about 10:13 in the a.m. and 11 a.m. following the new early show hosted by, again, the interviewer to the stars, Mr. Scott Spears. All kinds of great radio for you 24/7 here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Ron, you have a few blogs coming up. You write your Progressive Professor blog every day. Can you give our listeners
Next week will be 11 years since I started it. August 11th, it will be 11 years since I've been doing this. Over 6,400 entries.
Can you give our listeners maybe a sneak preview of what you'll be writing about later this week in your blog?
Well, there's a number of different issues, actually. I have to point out that that there's a lot of exciting things that are going on right now that require one to to pay attention. So let me just go, because I actually write them up ahead of time. So let me just go and look, because I, you know, you caught me off guard with asking me this. So let me just look it up. Okay, for instance, the fact is that I have an article I'm going to come out with that says, it says the Democrats have a great, quote, farm system, just like in baseball, for the future, while the Republicans have a gloomy future, meaning all these younger people who are not going to probably be the nominees and may not be vice president still could be future leaders of the Democratic Party, these other candidates that are running. But who really is the future of the Republican Party? I don't really know what it is right now. I think the Republican Party is having trouble recruiting people. They're having trouble. The one black Republican in the House, Will Hurd, is leaving. Two women out of the 13 in the House that are the Republicans are leaving. They are having trouble recruiting people. And then I'm also going to talk about the fact it is true, and I had forgotten about this. I heard this on a talk show, that the Democrats don't have to win the white, the white vote of the country. They have not won the white vote in the last 50 years, meaning a majority, since Lyndon Johnson, except for Bill Clinton in 1996. If they win 35-40% of the white vote, and they win the minority vote and the women's vote, they win elections. So it's not as if they're going to win a majority of the white male vote. But to what, the males, not the women. So that is something else. And I'm also going to write about the what I call the disaster of Kentucky. I think they have the two worst senators any state has if you're going to combine the two, between Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul. And I'm also going to write an article about McConnell being a traitor to American values and national security. So I got some interesting things coming up this week.
Sounds like this week will be a interesting, educational, and obviously surprising time to read the ProgressiveProfessor.com of Kentucky, another state just to the south of the great Buckeye State. The future of the Republican Party.
I want to mention also, there have been three presidents now with two terms of office, tying the 1801 to 1825 period, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe. We've had 8 years of Clinton, 8 years of Bush, 8 years of Obama. We've never had four presidents in a row win two terms. So are we likely to have this record broken in 2020, meaning that Trump will not win? If he wins and finishes, it'll be four straight eight-year presidents. It's never happened. So it's an interesting thing to think about also. Yeah.
It is an exciting time to be an American. We encourage people to vote, even if you don't like the candidates. Like, it seems like I face that quandary every time I go to the polls. Just pick the one you can stomach. You can stomach the most. I have no other way to say it. What you brought up about the Republican Party, Ron, is true. We have all these Democrats and very diverse bunch, but
and a lot of them are very young in their 40s.
Yeah, and who's the future of the Republican Party? It's kind of hard to say. I mean, we bring up Nikki Haley, maybe, and William Weld, maybe. Kasich is
William Weld is in his 70s, yeah. So he's not the future.
Kasich is getting really up there, but who,
well, I could also say that I think Cheney's daughter, who's the third ranking figure in the House, I think has ambitions to run for president in the future, like in 2024. I can see her doing that. I really can.
It seems like we're just trying to draw straws to find out who these up-and-coming Republicans are, but Democrats, yeah, we could spend a whole week's worth of shows on them. And that certainly is some intriguing food for thought. Now, certainly it could be a byproduct of the fact that we have Republican in office right now. If we had a Democrat, it might be the other way around. For example, the Republican nominees, just like it is with the Democrats now, there was, you know, 300 or 400 of them, right? I mean, the debates had all these people. Of course, they got whittled down.
Not so many so young. This time, these people are really young. Castro, O'Rourke, Buttigieg, people like that. Quite a few young ones, you know.
But we have kind of moved to where the Republican Party is an older demographic, and Democrats are younger.
Well, that's also true of presidents. I wrote that article that showed that most Democratic presidents are young and most Republican presidents are coming old. And that's generally been the case in recent history, yes.
And although we talk about Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, one of the youngest presidents and, again, a Republican.
He's the youngest. But
an old school Republican, not like the Republicans of today. Well, speaking of today, our show is about ready to come to a conclusion. I guess I can say conclusion because that's the end of this program and another fascinating discussion, Ron. We covered a lot, I think, more in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4 more topics than we normally do. Upcoming blogs, just discussing the tragic event in Dayton and other locales over the weekend. I'm just speechless about that. I don't know what else to say. And taking a look at possible Secret Service protection for the presidential candidates. Looking at what could possibly happen as in the Republican scheme of things. Will Donald Trump obviously be the Republican nominee in 2020, but will he have challengers? Lots going on in the great world we live in, Ron, and I'm sure next time we talk, there will be more news tidbits to ponder.
Yes, I'd like to add one thing that I've thought about. Female Republicans. I could see in the future up to 3 women Republicans running for president, competing against each other. Nikki Haley is one. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee is the second, and the third is Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who again is the third-ranking Republican. I can see them all having ambitions to be the first woman president, assuming it's not a Democrat. I think they could all be competing against each other, you know, 5 years from now.
I know what a fan you are of Ms. Blackburn. She's one of your favorite people, right?
Oh, I just love the woman. And Cheney, both of them. At least Nikki Haley I can admire, but I do not like Liz Cheney. She's just like her father, and I don't like Marsha Blackburn. I hope she would lose, but she won the seat, so she's there, and I'm sure she would like to run. Yeah.
And on that note, Ron, we thank you very much for joining us here on The Talking Place on a finer mid-morning coffee break. Have a great rest of your Monday.
Thank you so much again for inviting me.